Pour yourself a cold one.
Let's drink them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time here on the College Draft Podcast, the only podcast I'm aware of that is year-round dedicated to the NFL draft, although really we end up talking a lot of college football. We talk the process of evaluating players. We get you ready for the biggest games all season. Early sneak previews on what these guys will be like from a fantasy perspective. He's the star of the show at FDuffy3. Puts in an insane amount of time breaking down all of these prospects throughout the 2018 football season. Obviously, as we head into the 2019 NFL draft. If you haven't already, make sure you go to dollarshaveclub.com/Tucker. I have to guess most males with brain cells are already members of that, but if you're not, dollarshaveclub.com/Tucker. We also have a survey, Bri, we need people to help us out with, correct?
Yeah, our good friends over at Podcast One are doing a survey. Look, it'll only take you about 5 minutes. It's completely confidential. But it's going to help with our advertisers and help align advertisers with the particular shows. It's also going to help by keeping our shows free. So it's very simple. We appreciate any help that you guys can do. Just go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. Again, podcastone.com/mysurvey.
That was really good, Bri. Were you reading from something there, or is that all just like off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head while I'm reading it on the computer.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. I was going to say, that was like really official and legit. Check out Bri and our handle on Twitter as well, at RTF Podcast. I personally am at Ross Tucker NFL. Twitter and Instagram and Facebook is facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Extremely excited, Fran, about today's guest, Daniel Jeremiah. So obviously you see him all over NFL Network, especially in the lead up to the draft. He's got his own podcast, Move the Sticks, that I was on recently with Bucky Brooks. I really enjoyed that. And Daniel, last week we had Dr. David Chow on, Pro Football Doc, and we went all over the process at the combine and even leading up to the draft of giving guys medical grades and how it changes and how different people look at things, which I thought was really interesting. And we were kind of hoping to get something similar about the process from your time as a scout, if that's okay.
No problem. No problem at all. I got to go back and listen to that one, though, because that is there's nothing more frustrating on the scouting side of things than to spend an entire spring, summer, and fall investing in a player and selling him to the room and feeling like you've got him where he belongs on the board. And then you come out of the combine and all of a sudden, like, wait, what happened to that guy? Where'd he go? Oh yeah, the medical grade got him.
So that's an interesting starting point, I guess, Daniel, which is, anything at the combine and medical grade, I know that that's a doctor trainer thing, but when you're a scout on the road, how much digging do you do on the injury history and the effect that it's had or could have on the player? Or do you just say, hey, he had, sophomore year, he tore his ACL, and then you're out of it?
It became more detailed the longer that I was in it in terms of the background. The teams have just gotten so hungry for every morsel of information. So as a scout, maybe when you first started, you're responsible for, okay, if he's missed any games, we need to know why he missed games. And if he's had any surgeries, we need to know, what those surgeries are. So that was a lot of that stuff you would even find in the media guide. Hey, he missed 7 games. Like you said, he tore his ACL 4th game of the year, blah, blah, blah. But then it got to the point where not only that, you obviously go and talk to the trainer and find out what injuries they had. And then you would be talking to the strength coach, and you want to find out, was he ever limited in the weight room? Did he ever miss workouts for any reason? Was he ever limited in what he could do exercise-wise? You're finding out all that information. Practices, did he ever miss a practice? Was he ever limited in practice? Was it ever a chance where you tried to lighten the load on him? And then you'd have to go back and go through high school. And a lot of that a lot of that information you get from the player himself at All-Star games, at the combine when you do those interviews. If you can't find the information, trying to look it up and maybe play at a smaller high school, do you ever miss any games? Do you ever have any concussions, any surgeries, any, you know, on and on and on and on. So that medical portion of the background that you got to put in the computer, when I first started in 2003, maybe it was for most guys, you know, two or three lines at most. Now you're talking about, you know, it's a big chunk in there. You're talking about a couple paragraphs worth of a medical history.
So, Daniel, you talked about, you know, you come back from the combine from Indy and you see, and you're able to look at the board. As an area scout, where are you at in the process when you're at that point in that current draft cycle in terms of looking ahead to next year? Because I think that's one of, like, the untold stories that fans don't necessarily get a too big of a grasp on, is where the area scouts are and the college scouting staff is for in terms of next year's draft while this year's draft cycle is still kind of taking place.
Yeah, you know, it's different by the club. You know, when I was working in Baltimore and in Cleveland, which, you know, Cleveland basically was the same as Baltimore because they had the same leadership. We were very much focused on the current cycle, and the area scouts were involved, you know, in the process to the very end. So you kind of completed that entire draft lap, I guess, for lack of a better word, with the group. Now, a lot of other teams, the area scouts go out and they provide the initial, I would say kind of just the initial report and kind of get these guys on the radar for the decision makers. And then you really pass the baton at that point in time to them, and they take it and run with it. And you don't know how the board stacks up. You don't know, involved in those discussions where you're debating players. They can move on to the next year's draft. I mean, I'm talking some of these teams right after, you know, right after the combine, I would say, you know, they have to go out and do the pro days. But even before the pro days, they're already starting to watch. And when they go to pro days, get background on next year's guys. So it's two different ways of how teams set up their organization. I'm a little more partial to having the scouts be involved in the whole process. I think that, you know, the more those guys know the players better than anybody else, they've been around them the most. So to kind of cut them off and cut them loose on the next year's group, I wasn't a huge fan of that, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of teams that do that now.
Yeah, I had heard, Daniel, when I was in New England, that it might be as soon as after the bowl games, but definitely after the combine.
They definitely move on. That is their. They are one of those teams. Those you get to the pro days, and you'd be with a New England scout, Ross, and you'd be asking a question or talking about somebody in this guy. They're not even concerned. They're done with this year's class. They are on to the next one.
Yeah, that's what I was told, is that they're totally, you know, like 6 months ahead of a lot of the other teams, you know, and ahead, I guess, is a relative term. Here's my question is, how much do, even if you're a scout that's with the current cycle until the draft goes through, how much of a conversation, if at all, is there about what the next year's draft class looks like? In other words, like, we know, and I've seen you tweeting about it and everything at Move the Sticks, that next year is supposed to have a great D-line class and not as good of a quarterback class, which both of those things would seem to be somewhat relevant when you're in the current draft class, just to know, hey, the guys next year at this position aren't looking that great so far, and the guys at this position are really looking pretty awesome. How much of a conversation, if at all, is there about the next year's expected draft class before this year's draft even happens?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say for any team that's in the market for a quarterback, you're always watching those guys and being able to kind of plot out what's coming in the next year, maybe even the next 2 years. Because if you're going to make that decision to draft a quarterback in the first round, you're putting your job, the head coach's job, the GM's job, everybody's job is on the line when you take a quarterback in the first round. So if you're going to do that, you better be aware of what's coming or what's not coming. I mean, you can look right there. Fran knows. Look at the Eagles and kind of did their homework, and they felt great about the Goff and Wentz draft and felt like, okay, hey, this, you know, when we kind of stack this these two guys up with what we think's coming in the next couple of years, it's pretty favorable. So that can definitely be involved in the decision-making process at that position. And then some of the other stuff, I mean, other positions, yeah, I mean, you're going to know who the top guys are in the country. I mean, you can't watch, you know, if you're watching a USC offensive lineman and you watch him against Ohio State, I mean, I know Bosa wasn't in the draft, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out he's pretty good. And you kind of know who those top-tier guys are going to be at every position.
So, DJ, give us some insight into, I guess, the stage of the process that just completed. And that was, you know, that late spring area where we start to get the national grades from National Scouting and Blesto, and the teams get those grades back. What happens inside buildings around the country now once those grades get back? And I guess, from your experience, what goes into those grades that get given to the teams?
Yeah, you know, so everybody, the teams that are subscribed to National or Blesto, they get those reports in. And for me, I think the value in those reports are not in the grades that are given, not in what they've said even about the players. You can obviously comb it for some background information if there's some character that maybe pops up. But really, the most important information you get there is just verified heights and weights. And in some instances, speed, but for the most part, you just get the heights and weights, which is helpful. But we, you know, I've been around teams where we just did all of our own spring scouting. We did not, Baltimore was not a member of either scouting service. So they kind of just did their own. And then, there's something to be said for that because you're not relying on anybody other names. You're having to go back and watch every soon to be senior starter. So you'd go back through, do your homework and find out who started for, if you're doing if you're living in the Midwest, you'd go, Michigan has, 10 guys that are going to be seniors next year that start. So I got to watch all 10 of those guys in the spring for my big schools. Not necessarily worry about the small schools at this point in time, but over this period, you want to get all those starters written up. So you go into that school, knowing where they line up, kind of having at least some feel for the player. You're trying to get that done now. And I think one of the most important things that these personnel departments are doing right now is they'll have their scouts, even though they're college scouts, they'll assign them a couple NFL teams, and you'll watch the upcoming free agents for those teams to kind of help out the pro department. And it's really helpful to watch NFL tape after you've been watching this college tape for so long, because it kind of recalibrates your eyes about what NFL football looks like.
Can you go into the Blesto National thing for a second? Because I always think that's interesting that those are the scouts that like hit the road first, or at least that when I was going through the process, they're like, hey, there's a national scout here. There's a Blesto scout. Cause it's interesting. I don't know if it was both of them or one of them, but I got a reject grade. And what's crazy about it is one of my teammates, so we had three offensive linemen, believe it or not, my senior year at Princeton that all got signed. One actually, Dennis Norman, got drafted. Two of us got signed as undrafted free agents. But when the Blesto or National Scout came through, Dennis got a draftable grade. They actually gave the other guy a free agent grade, and they gave me a reject grade. And what was interesting about that is, as a result, like, he got all these mail and letters and stuff from agents. I never did. And I remember I had one agent, Joe Linta, who had seen me play as a junior against Isaiah Kasavinsky, who ended up being a fourth-round pick of the Seahawks. And he came up to me after the game on the field and blah, blah, blah. So he's the only agent that ever called me, and he's like, "Yeah, I heard you're gonna get rated for Blesto or whatever." Well, they actually ended up giving the other guy a priority free agent grade and not me. And so I was like, "Are you sure that's not a mistake? Like, are you?" I just couldn't believe that they had given the other guy a free agent grade and me a reject grade. But then you're kind of like stamped with that a little bit, like, through the process, especially I feel like if you're from a small school.
Yeah, you know, it's huge for small school guys to get on that list, because while, you know, I don't think every team, you know, reads too much into the grades, what it does do is if it's a school that's not a main school for you and you get somebody written up there that gets a make it grade is what we would call it, then you'd have to add them to your list. Now, most people that are scouting the Northeast, Princeton's going to be on their stop no matter what. But let's say if you're at maybe you're at Carson Newman, you know, that might not be a stop every year for that area scout unless they have somebody. So if somebody is given a make it grade by a scouting service, then, you know, even if you don't know who that scout was or if he's any good, you got to go do your homework. So you're going to definitely pop in there. So my thing is, if you're at a small school, while you want to be the one that's on that list, no doubt. If you're not, you're hoping at least one of your teammates is, because then all 32 teams are going to parade through there. And if their scouts are any good, they're going to be able to find you while they're there to see him. But you got to remember with these services, these are all young beginning scouts that are doing this. They go out in the spring. They have nobody there to help them. They're kind of flying blind, and you get some wacky grades. I mean, you can go back through those lists and find some guys that were rated as top five players in their senior class. And you know, in some cases they were fifth, sixth round picks. So you got to take that with a grain of salt, but I could definitely understand being frustrated when you're on a team and seeing some of those grades pop up and going, are you serious right now? You've got him as a draftable guy and I'm a reject. How does that work?
Well, and what's funny about that, just to piggyback off that, you're 1,000% right that it helped greatly that we had another guy that had a draftable grade and was a freak of nature, ended up playing 9 years because every scout did come through. And so a bunch of them would sit down with us and meet with us, or they'd look at my tape. And even though I'd gotten the reject grade, the Princeton coaches said, no, you need to look at this guy too. Mm-hmm. So, and we even had like Mike Tice was the Vikings O-line coach. He came through. Frank Verducci ended up coming through. And then when I got cut by Washington, he was the Bengals assistant O-line coach, and he worked us out. And then when I got cut my second year by Washington, he was the Cowboys O-line coach and picked me up off waivers because of that workout. You know, so it's that part of it's crazy. There's a flip side, though, too, Daniel, which you'll appreciate, is I remember talking with Ryan Grigson, and he said, Ross, I was the Northeast scout for the Eagles. I came through, and he's like, I made a mistake that I'll never make again. And I said, what was that? He's like, I just couldn't get my head around the idea that an Ivy League school had two legit NFL linemen, let alone three. I just didn't think there was any chance that that was possible. And that was back when, you know, in the late 90s, nobody really from the Ivy League was going. It's a lot different now. I think there was 13 Harvard guys in training camps last year. So the Ivy League's been churning out a lot of guys recently, but back then it wasn't like that. And so the positive was everybody came through. The negative was, I guess, was that Gregson said he'll never make that mistake again, but he couldn't fathom that one Ivy League school had, you know, two or three guys at the same position.
Yeah, there's weird years like that, though, not even just the Ivy League. I mean, I think back to a couple years ago, I think it was Southern Utah that had like three draftable players. You know, you might go 7-8 years without seeing a player get drafted from Southern Utah, but they had Killebrew, who went to the Lions. They had LaShawn Sims, who's a nice corner for the Titans. Had one other player as well. There's three guys from a school like that. So you never know where they're going to come from, but the coach does play a big role in that, because I can't tell you the number of times I've gone into schools on scouting visits to see player X, and you go talk to the position coach and he goes, you know what, I get it. You know, he tested well and you guys are interested in him. He's not the best player in this position room, much less the team. And he'll tell you about another player. And then it turns out the coach knows what he's talking about. We get carried away sometimes with the testing numbers and lose sight of who the better football player is. And sometimes a coach can set you straight there.
DJ, I don't know about you, but this part of the process, the, you know, this early stage looking forward to 2019, it's one of my favorite parts because, you know, you get fresh eyes on players that we haven't really gotten a deep dive in on. There's not a lot written in terms of, you know, the media space and draft Twitter about players. So, you know, you really go in with really fresh eyes on all these guys. What is the process like for you at this point as you're preparing now for next year's draft?
Well, I love it. It really is my favorite favorite time, because I feel like you've been watching these same guys over and over again and talking about the same guys over and over again. It gets kind of, it can get old by the time you get to the end of April. And then now, you get a chance to dig into a whole new batch of guys. It's like opening up new Christmas presents. You don't know what's inside. You hope it's good, but you never know. So we always talk about when you're watching other players. So if you're watching a guy in last year's draft, we call it scan scouting. Like, you're scan scouting a little bit. You're seeing some of the highlights and the flash plays that jump out at you from some of these other guys, but you don't really have a good feel for it until you lock in on them specifically and study them for 3 or 4 games, which is what, I try and do during this time of the year. Over the summer, my goal is usually before the season, if I can get, 50 to 60 guys done, of some of the top players, it just gives me a nice little base there. I've got them done off this year. Now, eventually, I'll circle back and watch them off next year's tape as well, those same guys. But what it allows me to do is then when we get to the fall, I won't revisit those players till later, so they can start with a fresh new batch of guys. And so while the list is going to change and the order will move around as I circle back to those original 50 or 60, it populates your pool pretty quickly. And that's always been a huge help for me.
So a question I have is, you mentioned, like, right now you'd be looking at Michigan and the senior starters or whatever.
Yeah.
When do you look at Rashawn Gary? Like, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm talking about you now or if you're a scout.
Yeah.
But when do you look at Nick Bosa and the underclassmen that Ed Oliver? You know they're coming out. Like, how do you decide when to look at those guys?
I think the smart way to do it is you'll have, your college director will send out, you'll get a list. So, say, okay, you're going to have to watch every, Michigan, give you maybe 10 to 15 schools to watch in the spring. You're not going to watch everybody. They'll even assign some of the office guys, some schools, just so you kind of fill in, get all the Power Fives done. But say they send you, you're the Midwest area scout, they send you, you need to do these 10 teams, all their senior starters. And then what they'll do is they'll probably go off of, some draft lists. They'll cull through some websites. They'll also go off All-American lists and say, hey, if while you're doing Michigan and Ohio State, make sure you get Rashawn Gary done. Make sure you get Bosa done. The guys that they feel like there's a greater than 50% chance they're going to come out, you'll add them to that list as well. So, yeah, like for me, I'm not on, not with the team side of it. At this point in time, I'm not doing every senior starter from Michigan. I'm watching Rashawn Gary because I'm trying to get the, top 50, 60 type players done during this time of year. And as we know how the draft works now, the majority of those guys are going to be underclassmen.
DJ, my last question for you will just be, when it comes to this part of the process and as the season gets underway and we get to the more important games and we get to the end of the season, how hard is it for you to kind of shake the first impression that you get now during the summer? Because that was something, honestly, like even looking back a few weeks ago, we looked back to the draft from, what was it, 2014, the Clowney and Khalil Mack year. And I remember watching Khalil Mack from his junior season, the year before he decided he was going to come out. And there were just a couple things about his film that kind of bothered me in terms of like inconsistent effort and things like that. And the effort was better his final year in that Ohio State game where, he beat up Jack Muhort. Like those things, they kind of stand out. But I still couldn't shake some of those like negative feelings I had from that first watch back in the previous summer. How hard is it for you to kind of shake some of those as you get more information, you take in more film as the season progresses?
Yeah, it can be difficult. I think there are times where you just say, hey, maybe I just didn't have a good lunch that day when I watched this guy in the spring and I was in a bad mood or something because it's like a totally different player. Guys do get better. Guys do improve, and it works the other way as well. But some of those things, yeah, they stick with you. I mean, to me, a great example is watching Baker Mayfield the year before. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was like kind of a souped-up Colt McCoy. I mean, that's kind of what I thought he was when I watched him. Now, I come back and watch him this year on tape, and I'm like, man, he's better than that. I go see him play live twice, and he was outstanding. So I ended up obviously giving him a much higher grade and moved him up. That being said, even though you could make a case that he played better this year than any of the other quarterbacks, I couldn't move him all the way up there because I still had some of those lingering concerns I had from watching him in the spring. So he ended up being my third quarterback in the group when you could make a strong case that, hey, he played better than everybody else at that position this year. It's, you got to take the whole lot, put it all together and try and make the puzzle fit.
Last question, Daniel, really appreciate the time. I know you're just diving into it now. It sounds like it's the year of the D lineman coming up. I mean, I still can't, I've never been to Clemson, but there must be something amazing there that all those kids stayed in school. Like, I don't know what they have there. I won't even get into the different possibilities of why they might stayed but it's unbelievable. It sounds like it's the year of the D lineman this year, huh?
Yeah, you know, the crazy thing about that group is, you know, while we, you know, job is to focus on the draft and watch these draft eligible players. Last year I had a chance to go to the opening and watch the top high school players in the country. And I think Clemson has the two best high school defensive ends in the country that are coming in there to join all those kids that stayed, including this guy. I think Xavier Thomas is going to be a freshman. And he looked like a grown man when you watch him up there at that All-American camp. So not only do they keep all those guys there, they bring in another batch. So they are absolutely ridiculously loaded up front. When you talk about Bosa and what he brings to the table at Ohio State, they got some more young kids there that are impressive. Rashawn Gary is a freak that kind of reminds me of Cam Jordan, just in terms of the height, weight, speed, athleticism, and upside that he has. You go to Houston and watch Ed Oliver, who's just, he's the closest thing we've seen to Aaron Donald since he came out. So it's going to be fun to watch all those guys. And even though we've, say, hey, last year's quarterback group was a lot of marquee players we knew a lot about, big-name guys, big-name programs, and I think we had, five in the first round, we'll see some quarterbacks emerge here. It's not going to be all defense here. Some of these guys will emerge from the shadows.
Daniel, this time of year, where can people catch you? Obviously, always at Move the Sticks on Twitter. You got the Move the Sticks podcast. Basically, just Google Move the Sticks, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you can find it there. Go find the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume your podcast. But we're still going strong, getting two of those a week here with my buddy Bucky and having some fun. Today, I think on the podcast, I was just looking for something. You know, ideas are hard to come by this time of year, if you guys know. But I went back through and found my final mock draft from the 2014 year, and I'm going to go back through. So on the podcast today, we're going to have some fun and say, what if instead of picking who they picked who was in this mock draft, how history would have changed a little bit in the NFL. So we'll have some fun with that.
Nice.
I love it. Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thanks so much for the time, as always.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
There he is, Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network at Move the Sticks on Twitter. Fran, that was awesome, man. I'm really, I like every aspect of what we do year-round, but learning about the process, because to be honest with you, I had some idea, but I just learned a bunch. I learned a crap load last week from Dr. Chow, and I learned a bunch today from Daniel, and I've been associated with the NFL for, 17, 18 years.
A coach told me very, very early on in my professional career, Ross, that once you're through learning, you're through. And like, this is one of the best parts about working in the NFL is just there's so many people you can learn from, and there's so many resources, and there's so many facets to the entire process that it just makes it a fascinating event to cover. So it's great stuff, as expected, from Daniel.
Well, we're going to keep it going. Every week you'll be able to hear us here on the College Draft Podcast. Make sure, if you haven't already, that you are subscribed to the show. We really appreciate those of you that rate and review the show. We're trying to get some love among all of the talent evaluators out there and really among the people that are just draft heads that just love the draft, can't get enough. We want more of them to listen. So hopefully you're already following Fran at FDuffy3 and me at Ross Tucker NFL and even the podcast handle at RTF Podcast, and retweet that or like my post on Facebook so we can get more and more people involved here and learning about this stuff. Fran, you can always follow his stuff, of course, on Twitter, like I said, as well as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, talking about the game of football from the All 22. We'll keep it rolling the next few weeks. Before we dive into the conference previews and the season is here, we'll get some more awesome guests on so you can really learn more about the process that goes into the draft. It's crazy that one event, Fran, over 3 days is a year-long process for a lot of people. Like, we're not talking about like one person. Like, there's entire staffs that dedicate their entire year to that 1 3-day event.
And it's all obviously with the ultimate goal of getting to play football in early February. You know, and that's everybody is working towards that one goal. You're always trying to get better, and it really starts with this whole process. I mean, it's the life, the draft is the lifeblood of all 32 teams in the NFL. If you're doing it right, that's how you're getting your team better year in, year out.
That'll do it. Awesome stuff, Fran. As always, we'll have Even Money and Fantasy Feast, new episodes of both those shows tomorrow, as well as the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Wednesday's always a big day for us on the RT Media Network. Other than that, for right now, the keg is kicked. We're all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chug, 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 chug.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.